All right, welcome back. Welcome back to Greenbox Gaming Plays Delta Green Impossible Landscapes. My name's Joe. I'm your handler for this operation, and I'm joined by friends who were totally kind to me all the time, including Dace playing Busek.
Hi. Hiya. Oh, I can't wait for you to get glasses. I'm going to drag you through the mud.
That's a hot take. But not as hot as some of the takes we got from Jean playing Benedict over the break.
Hello.
He's got some really strong political opinions. Super strong.
Do I? I thought that...
What was that country? What was the country where they Germany. Killed all the people with glasses?
Oh.
Oh, no. No, I don't think it was it. No, it's like in a... It was like Laos or something like that. Like they went. No, what? Like they literally killed everyone's glasses about? Because they were trying to get rid of the intellectuals. And if you have
Khmer Rouge in Cambodia,
oh, that's it. Yeah, it's the Khmer Rouge in Cambodia. Yeah,
they were trying to get rid of all the intellectuals, but the stupid people were too stupid to realize smart people don't always wear glasses.
I'm not joking, that is Brad. Dunning I wish Kruger I was. Club.
You just it turns out that
it turns out that people who decide that you need to kill everybody not the brightest. And of course I'm joined by the only person who was who did not say something mean to me in during the break, Brad playing Hank.
Hello. Yes,
that's only because his microphone was
I never
off.
Will
and he gets a joke in
oh, that's not fair. That's nepotism.
I'm racking them up.
Not a real joke.
That would, I have one.
Do the other two of you, do you have jokins, or have you like used yours at some point in time?
Dace has a joke.
I have one.
Yeah.
Okay. All right.
I'll get...
That didn't actually just happen, right? That was a joke,
no,
right?
No, that takes did not me back just happen. Dace, no! He gets a joke. What are you doing?
I understand it's good for the group, but my competitive side is coming out. That's bullshit. That is fucking bullshit.
It is bullshit.
You just awarded Brad for not having balls.
Yeah.
Not being willing to stand up to the authority figure.
I don't
That's
agree
what
with
you just
that
did.
Either.
You reinforced that behavior.
You made fun it of the joke Dace for having to get glasses.
Right.
You got to keep him in his place, Brad. If he gets too big of a head... The balance is going to be thrown off, and this whole game is going to be
You see, Jean's playing the metagame from the, like, oh, we need to get all the bonuses we need, but Dace is playing the true metagame. We got to keep the GM down, like, so that we can actually survive. Like, we don't want to...
It's a delicate balance. It's a delicate balance.
Yeah.
And now it's thrown off.
Fucking Brad, every time. You know why? You know why this happened? It's because Joe let him be a GM. This is why this is happening.
That's
and now
what it is.
Like weird alliances happening. And you know what? You know what, Dace? We need to form an alliance.
No, we are not. This is how World War One happened, guys. We can't. We can't start partitioning ourselves.
Yeah, we both have glasses.
We both have
they
glasses.
Don't.
Right? Yeah.
We're gonna. I just think
we obviously need
throw
to destroy the intellectuals,
in
Brad.
Wait, we have
what?
To take them or out just, before they can kill us because our glasses make us smart.
Or just destroy their glasses so they can't see, period.
Right.
Yeah, that
genetically
suck.
Inferior. I think we can all agree.
Or, like, Joe destroys eyeballs. So
yeah, just destroy your own eyes. Which is always a choice.
Joe, do you have a name for the skeleton to your right?
Oh, his name's Hippocrates.
Oh, yes, of course, okay.
Yes, in the chat, in Wills just said there used to be four group members, but now the fourth has stood behind Joe. So
accurate.
So, just saying, he's there for reasons, a warning
please
to the
note,
others.
He does not have eyeballs either.
Yes, yes, takes
or
after
glasses.
Me. Yeah, now you'll notice no glasses on this one.
Hippocrates. Yeah. But what is Hippocrates known for?
He's the father of medical, like, medical theory.
Oh, Hippocratic oath and all that. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Do no harm or something.
But something that Dace had mentioned in the interim, he's like, how many episodes have we been in the war zone? And it's actually only, like, three episodes.
Yeah,
but
it's
it feels
that
like
what?
But it feels like it's a long time because of the break we had. from Impossible Landscapes.
Yeah, we spent much longer in the hotel.
Yeah. Yeah, you guys did.
There's also more going on in the hotel. Like, mm-hmm. this is like an extended chase scene, basically.
It's no fun. That's for sure.
I miss Charlie.
But, yeah.
And you've got issues with the writers of this module, and I will be sending angry letters to Arc Dream Publishing.
Oh, good. Excellent. That's always a good way to just really piss off the people who own the thing that you're doing. Like, you know, just like really stick it to them.
How many?
I just feel
what's the
anti-authoritarian.
What's today. Your
who else can I piss off?
Right. What do you hate most about what's happened to us here in the war zone?
It's a loss of control with no discernible way to reach the objective that is right there. Like John said, it's a skybox. It's right there. And no matter how long you run towards it, it stays the same distance away. And it's like, what the fuck are we doing? We meet a chain gang. That, right. What element of plot was that supposed to give us? Like,
look,
it's just a...
I have a question for Arc Dream. Like, how many letters do you get from disgruntled dead players lashing out against your storylines for when they should that's lash out is. At the GMs having killed them? That's my question.
Right.
We must if the skybox is just programmed there, we have to find the architect. Change the program.
Right.
The architect, yeah. And there's that thing where it's like vis-a-vis. There's all the TV screens and all the different versions of accordingly, Hank, like you know who are like no fuck you like at the architect. But so how about we hop right back into it? You guys want to get across the war zone so bad? Why don't we get right back into it? Last time you guys continued toward. Yes, towards this kind of, and you know, and I really do imagine it feels like that. It feels like this static thing that seems to be close, but get no closer, no matter how far you move. This is going to be a deep cut. Dace, do you remember when we used to play Breath of Fire 4, there was that bit where you have to go across the Great Plains to find the dragon?
The Great Plains?
And it's
I remember that.
But it is like a skybox with absolutely no reference. And you're like moving in this vast open environment that you can only see so far, and it was just like mind-boggling. It's really fascinating. They were able to capture that on PS1.
That is a really apt description, because the trick to that was you had to go in one particular direction out of 360 degrees.
Exactly.
You had to focus on one direction, and that was the only way to get through that plane.
Yeah, game design has come a long way. But anyway, you guys after, you know, making your way through, coming across the anarchists, the resistance, making your way through the war zone, suffering this really, really awful artillery barrage. And the last thing that happened is that you came across, you know, a Dace called it a chain gang, you know, a group of prisoners, it seems like, emaciated, you know, just barely clinging on. And in their just like panic and their madness, they kind of chased you guys. And two of your team members were like, fuck this. Like we've got guns, and they're just barely hanging on. Let's obliterate them. But Busiak, you know, one of the still sanest of you, is like, no, like, we have to find a way. Like, we can't just murder these people. And you use that word, murder. Like, it's not just. It's not right. You know, which is something that I think you lose touch with after having gone through everything that Hank and Benedict have, and Busiak still clinging on to it in some way, you know, which is a lot for a man who looks like he's from Mad Max. So last time you guys took shelter in this old like jewelry store type thing, but now you've finished resting, and you know, and Busiak actually took a little more damage. It turned out that, you know, like maybe in fleeing from this group that he pulled some stitches or something, was not able to rest well. And so you guys are now ready to move on. So what's next?
About that, can a character do first aid on themselves? This might have come up before.
So, unless I'm mistaken... Well, actually, so the first aid skill, the way it is stated in here, unless I'm mistaken, you cannot heal. You can only heal when you take new damage, right?
Mm-hmm.
Let's see. First aid, the initial treatment, use it to help a character restore HP.
It doesn't seem fair after a fumble. Like, a fumble is just...
Really, yeah, I think the fumble's supposed to be punishing.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that the treatment, I think per the rules, I think the treatment is only allows you to, let's see what it is. You cannot benefit again from first aid until you suffer new damage. But because it's a fumble, I'm going to not count it. So
okay.
Yes, if you have a new injury after this, you can attempt to heal that one. But right now, you just have to kind of see to your wound. Maybe your wound was worse than it seemed.
I don't think you can do like first. What I'm saying is you can't do first aid on yourself, but you could do like a medicine yourself.
Well, I don't think Busiek has any medicine is the problem.
Yeah.
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 Unless I'm mistaken.
I don't want to dive too deep into it, but I think that makes sense what you said, Joe.
Yeah. So yeah, so what are you guys gonna do? Like what's the next plan here?
Benedict starts looking through the jewelry to see if there's anything interesting.
Well, the jewelry is all gone. Like this place has been thoroughly ransacked.
Are there any jeweler's tools?
How about this, Benedict? Make me a sanity check.
Oh, not a search? Okay.
Nope, make a sanity check.
That's a success.
Yep, you don't find nothing.
God damn it.
Thoroughly ransacked.
Well, I mean, is this crazy, but what if we try... Is there any working vehicles I could possibly see around us that we could, like, maybe use to navigate closer to the...
Like a small helicopter.
Like a fighter jet or something like that.
Like, does there happen to be, I don't know, a tank outside?
Hovercraft.
You know?
Hovercraft.
Right.
It's a legitimate question.
A hovercraft.
Or a bike with a sidecar.
For two...
Or a bike without a sidecar.
Huh? This is like cool. Playing Wobbly Life with my nephew.
is that what this is? Okay. Okay, so let me try something here. Okay, so that's what you're looking for. So I assume you're not looking inside the store. I assume you are looking outside.
Right.
Hank, yeah,
is there
nothing.
A back door to the jewelry store, or do we have to go out the door we came through?
There is probably... a back door. Give me one moment. Let me roll something real quick. Yeah, Hank, you look outside and you don't see anything. Yeah. I think that this area, if there are any vehicles, they have been damaged by war. There's a reason they've been left here. It's not because, you know, someone didn't bring in a piece of equipment and leave it because they could take it. So, like, you know, you're not able to see something. But I will say, like, if you guys want to exit out, like, through a back, like, and try to maybe go a different way than this group of prisoners went, that makes a lot of sense. I see no reason that would not be the case.
Okay. I guess back on the dusty trail again. I don't see any vehicles about. I guess we're just going to have to huff it again.
Yeah.
Let's push on.
Okay, who's leading the way?
Hank will not, because he tried that last time, and it only led us to crazed criminal gang.
How do you? I don't know if they were criminals. They just had maybe they were from a fancy dress party. Well,
they were in prison for either political reasons, or maybe because they were crazy. Who knows?
Who knows?
Benedict, I noticed you ain't taking point in a while.
Oh.
Maybe you should, get up here.
I don't have a lot of confidence we're going to get out of here, but you know what? I'll lead the way, whatever the fuck that means in this place.
Roll a d10.
Attaboy. Step up to the plate.
Roll me a sanity check first for Benedict. Oh. And then roll me a d10.
D10, that's not nice. Shit, I clicked it twice, so maybe the first one is a failure.
Yeah, let's go with the first one, because you clicked twice. So your first one's a failure. I was going to say, go ahead and then roll me the...
7.
Roll me that. 7? Okay, so that would be... Yeah, okay. You guys, Benedict, and Hank, you and Benedict have this relationship where you have watched each other deteriorate. Thrive. you guys haven't been with Busiak, like, you don't know him as well. But I think Hank especially has been with Benedict long enough. And I imagine in this way like that, Busiak and Hank are kind of like, you know, covering Benedict as Benedict is going. And it seems that every time Benedict comes to a piece of debris or a door, or something that looks like it's a dead end, it seems that the second time he looks, it's back. And maybe out of the corner of you guys' eye, again, there's this, like, you don't want to look at it because you know what happens when you look at weird shit. You know, you see things move or there that were not there just a moment ago. As the world seems to open up, and Benedict, you get this feeling that there's almost this magnetic pull. Like, you feel like you're being pulled toward the palace. And it seems like the cobbles themselves are making a way for you. You guys end up, at some point in time, you come to a big barricaded wall, like a wall that is built of broken pieces of metal and wood all together with a door, like a handmade door in it. And Benedict, you push through it, and you guys are moving tactically, I imagine. You're not just going brazenly. And you see, you come out into a small, maybe it had been like a courtyard between some buildings. And all around it are what appear to be these little shelters. Places where it looks like one or two people might slide in and sleep. And maybe there's even a big red cross painted on a shack, that looks like, it's makes you think, oh, it's... And as you guys move in here, I'd imagine Hank being the most alert of you. Hank is the first one who hears the moving sound and turns very quickly and maybe raises his weapon up, and you see what looks to be a woman, and she's gaunt and kind of covered in rags, and she's holding a small child, and she is like down in one of these little lean-to shelters, and she's holding the child, and she's looking at you with these big eyes, and she's terrified. And Hank, as your weapon lowers from her, you see someone, maybe a man or maybe another woman, kind of push their way out of one of these shelters, and before long you see that there's a few dozen people here, and they look like civilians. They're dirty, bruised, and they're coming out slowly, carefully towards you. And, maybe one of them holds his hands up in front of him, hey, don't shoot. And it seems like you've stumbled upon a group of survivors in this awful, war-torn place.
Seems like all the civilians aren't doing as well as the folks we saw back. Further back outside of this war zone. Wonder if I have anything I could offer them.
We don't have to eat. Presumably they don't have to eat, right?
I don't know how it works. Wyatt Busiek.
Shut the hell up.
What are you two on about?
Sorry. I didn't mean to interject into your soliloquy there, Hank.
Hank will lower his gun, raise his hand like a friendly gesture, give kind of like a universal sign for like, hello, what are they speaking? Hank will kind of turn to the woman. Is the kid still alive that she's holding? The child?
Oh, yeah, a small child, and it's alive, and everyone, and it's not that everyone's like, they're not, that doesn't look like they're gonna like drop dead from hunger now, but they're definitely, right. Skinny, unwell. They seem to have barricaded themselves in this little area here. And if you speak to them, you lower your weapon, you hold your hands up, they kind of talk to each other, and they're speaking in Tartesian. None of you know Tartesian, but they're speaking to each other, and one of them like comes to you, and you like maybe one of them kind of steps forward, maybe like an older woman. She like kind of steps forward, and she like has like a cane, and like a big bandage on her leg. Looks like she's been shot. And she like comes to you, Hank, and is talking to Tartesian, but she's kind of really interested in your whole getup. Like you're wearing this uniform, but you've also got this equipment that is probably quite odd to them.
Well, Hank will kind of shed the outer layers of, I'm assuming he's
like the overcoat.
And so it's kind of like shakes his head, is like, I'm not from him, Hank, and kind of like gesture towards the palace in the distance, and just like gesture like we're going towards the palace.
Palace, and they look off to the distance where you're going. And they're kind of like, it's like they seem to talk amongst themselves, and they're pointing to you, and they're pointing to the palace, and you're communicating via pantomime, right? And they're like,
maybe like make a little like.
Well, I'll take our invitation out and show her the invitation.
You mean from Abigail? That thing?
I thought we had like legit like invitations to the ball.
I don't know if we got them yet.
No. No,
you need. Oh, I thought we had legit invitations.
No. Yeah. If you, but like what you, Dace, what you're saying, like you're pantomiming, like we are going, like pantomiming, walking with your fingers,
point to the
palace. Yeah. They get what you think they get what they're saying. They're like they're kind of giving you like the like okay like whatever and I will say that there's probably a moment where, Hank like takes off this black wind, jacket, and Hank, however you have your stuff, you also keep in mind you have a medical kit that has one use remaining in it, right? And it probably has a big red cross on it, and when you shed your stuff, they see it and they point to it. And there's several of them that are, and this woman, she's like, she's pawing at this bag you have, and she points over to the shack that has a big red cross. And now that you're looking at the big red cross, you realize you don't know if it's a big red cross or it might be a big reddish brown cross. It like the cross itself might be blood. And it's like, and they're like, and they're pointing, and they're like, and they're kind of like holding, like, and they're like, they're pushing now, Hank, they're pushing you toward the shack.
Maybe there's like, someone that needs some medical attention in this shack. You guys got my back. I don't know what we're going to see in here. I don't feel.
Yeah.
I don't think these people mean us harm, but you can never tell in this place.
No.
Okay. We're ready.
Yep. Axe out. Axe in hand, back in Hank up.
Yeah. Okay. Well, they take you into this. Yeah, so you guys have your weapons out, and as you guys look around, there might be even on the periphery, not menacing you necessarily, there might be some younger men with clubs, like what are they going to do against men with guns, but they're doing the best they can, to protect. There might be like one person who has a pistol, right? They don't murder him.
Take him out.
But it doesn't appear that they're terribly well armed. But as Hank, you come in here and you see that there is stacked three high. There's a three high bunk in here, and two of the bunks have two people in them. So there's five different people in here in this little hospital, quote unquote, that have varying injuries. And there is a, maybe there is a, you know, a man here who has like broken glasses. He would have never lasted in Cambodia.
Fix
know?
Him.
Like he's
Fix
got, bro- him. Yeah, yeah. You know, he's got broken glasses, and you know, his sleeves are rolled up. And as you come in, you know, he's like, he kind of starts and kind of holds his hands up at first, like, what's going on? And you see there's like a basin with like bloody rags in it. You know, it's like you think that these people are trying the best they can to take care of each other, right?
Well, I think we'll ask him if he speaks English.
No, no one in here speaks anything other than Tartesian. Or maybe you hear a little bit of Russian. Maybe someone does. Maybe this guy kind of gives you like a little bit of like, oh, that's not Tartesian, that's Russian. But you know, you don't speak Russian either.
Well,
maybe Busiek like can get just like a word or two because he speaks Czech, you know, like a little bit. But like,
I'll do this. My medical kit has two uses left, actually.
Oh, I thought it was one. Okay. If you say so.
And bloom. Do I really just do the two sign that often, I guess? Or it's... the peace sign?
You're just a very peaceful person. Hank.
So
Hank,
I can.
What do you? No, Hank. Those are for us.
I'm not going to give them all of it. I'm going to give them half of what's in here. So I'll give them like.
Why?
The equivalent of one. Well. We might need a guide to the palace. We don't know if any of these folks have been here. Sir, and I'll hook like the medic and kind of, for to best he can, gesture, has anyone who's sick here from the palace?
It's hard for you to... that's a pretty complicated thing to deliver via Panama. I'm like...
Okay, Hank. Hank, stand back. Stand back. And Benedict steps up, and he makes a T. And he puts out his pinky, and he... T?
Son of a bitch.
Well, yeah, like, and at first, no one knows what you're talking about, and then you put your pinky out, and they're like, pinky? Oh! You know, like,
Any response?
Roll me a charisma roll.
Oh, you son of a bitch.
His highest stat.
No, it's not. It got numbed not anymore. Way down. You bastard.
Oh.
That's a success!
Oh my god.
Hell yeah. Hell yeah, Benedict.
You know, like, tea? These guys, like, you stick out the pinky, and their eyes light up. They're like, oh, and like, and maybe here in this little hospital, you know, like, maybe there is, like, a boiling, like, there's, like, a kettle there. There's, like, a small fire with a kettle on it, and... the guy offers it to you. He's like, oh yes, and he gives you these dirty little cups that they pour the stuff in, and you see that he is also like giving it to the patients, right? Like he's like giving the tea to the patients. He gives you, and he's standing there with you between this older woman who seems to maybe kind of be in charge here, and this guy who's kind of like their medic, Hank that you'd identified. He's like pointing at your bag, and he's like, you know, making like hands together, like, please.
No, Benedict, like,
you know, and he's like pointing at the bag, please.
He holds up three
cups,
three tea, three. Then he like points at the medic kit, three cups.
Okay, while Benedict is doing this, Busiek is gonna go into the tent and start doing first aids on the people in there.
Well, and I would say, Busiek, as you do this, like, at first, the medic, you know, he seems to be this kind of, like, meek kind of man, and at first, he almost, like, interposes himself between you and the patients. Like, don't touch them. You know, and, like, he holds a hand out and holds a hand protectively back towards them, and is, like, looking towards these other people, like, the other civilians here. You know, he's like, keep in mind what Busiek looks like, again, okay?
With mannequins on his crotch.
Yeah, and he's, like, holding out a hand. He's like, you know.
And Busiek will lift up his shirt and point at his stitches and be like, you know, I did that. I sew
Oh, and he's like
mimics sewing.
Okay, and he kind of gets it, and he's like, okay, and it's like, and maybe the woman tells him, you know, says something to him, Tartesian, seems to placate him, and he brings you over, and like, it's this dark little shack. You're literally operating by candlelight in this dark little shack, and he's hovering over your shoulder. He's hovering very a lot. You know, he seems.
Lusiak turns around and kisses him.
So you're gonna attempt to treat these people?
Yeah.
Okay. Roll me some. Okay, here's a question: are you gonna use the medicine that you guys have?
No.
You are not. Okay. All right. Roll me. There are five patients here. One of them, on Busiak's inspection, appears to have no physical injuries. You don't know if your first aid skill is going to be sufficient here to find out what's wrong with this person.
Okay.
You might have to use something else to try to suss it out, but the other four of them very obviously have different styles of wounds, shrapnel. Of one appears to have his arm in like a big puffy kind of brace, like you think the arm is out of joint and like has a compound fracture. It's bleak. What is Busiak's skill here for this kind of thing?
50. First aid.
That's one and two.
Yeah, let's see some rolls here. I would say
we need to make
I honestly think you should make four separate rolls, yeah. And, I know that's a lot.
Okay.
But
while
I think
this
that's
is happening, Benedict might go look at the one who doesn't have any wounds with two cups of tea. And maybe offer him a cup of tea. And he might try start to psychotherapy him.
Nice.
Oh, okay. All right. You son of a bitch.
That was my first thought.
I'll wait for the first aid.
Man, I wish Finnegan was here.
Right.
Okay, yeah, let's see these first aid rolls. Let me actually... All right,
first one. Success, 15 under 50. Second, failure. 98 over 50. Second,
failure.
Or third, failure. Fourth
success.
Success.
Okay, two successes, two failures. Now you did not get a critical failure.
You killed
failure.
Two people.
No, I'm not kidding. A critical failure would have killed one of these people.
That would have been bad, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. We would have had a mob.
So you can tell that the other person, that this medic has worked on these people to the best. And as you're looking, Busiak, you're not sure if this person actually has any medical experience. You think it might just be, this is the guy who does this now. Right. There are two of the people, you know, maybe one of them has a pretty nasty gunshot wound, like to the upper chest, and you're able to both extract the bullet and sew it up pretty well. And maybe the one whose arm is out of socket with the bone sticking out, you're able to very painfully put those, both reseat the shoulder. And there's a bit where you get Hank and Benedict and maybe the doctor guy there through pantomime to like, I need you to hold him down and I'm going to jerk on this arm, right, to get it back in place. And you think that given time, this broken arm may heal appropriately, maybe. And as these, it's very obvious that, you know, you're doing good work. The other two, you're not able to help, you know, like...
Yeast infections.
Terrible. Terrible yeast infections. Jesus Christ.
I apologize.
You should. You should be ashamed.
Where does that come from?
We broke John. Oh, man. But the other two, you're not able. But like, but this medic and the woman here, who seems to be the matriarch of this place, they are relieved. And they are obviously, they're so pleased. Like, in... They invite you in, and maybe they bring out some chairs. It looks like there might have used to have been a restaurant, like a bistro here or something, and there are still some dusty, torn chairs they bring out and set out, you know, like, and they give you this kind of thin, barely nourishing soup made of God knows what they might have. But they seem to be extremely appreciative of what you guys have done here. and Busiak, like there are, and there are people coming up to you in language, in again this language that you're not familiar with, and they're like, they're clapping you on the back and you know, shaking your hand, and they again, like, you're this whole thing, no words or no words that are known, right? But it's this, you know, you guys are in this moment, you're in this little place with these people who are just struggling to survive, and maybe especially Hank and Benedict, you're now thinking about what Busiak said about the prisoners. Like, you know, we have to keep our humanity. There are people here who are just stuck in the middle of this absolute madness, just doing the best they can. Well, and there's almost like an air of almost celebration and of relief amongst them and amongst you guys.
These guys are still bipedal, so.
Yeah, yeah. The second they go all fours, they're free game.
Yeah.
I would like everyone to get one willpower back if you are missing any willpower.
Oh, nice.
Can I give my willpower to someone else? I'm full. Can I?
Yeah. Tend to Benedict that man? Is on his 12th cup of tea, and it's just.
What is Benedict finding out about this person? Presumably, yeah. Without any.
Oh, can I, physical. Take one of those cups of tea, and he sits down with him, and he kind of holds his shoulder, and he offers him a cup of tea.
Yeah, give me a psychotherapy. Let's see.
He shows him an ink block.
a Rorschach test.
He shows him a Rorschach, but it's made with blood. And the
takes
guy.
A dollar. Instead, he takes one of his standard purchases and like neatens it up and tries to like put it on him. It's this face. What is this? Benjamin. This is a Benjamin. Benjamin. Benjamin Potts.
You're trying again, like not being able to communicate with this person. It is like it's like a man, like probably like in his 40s, and he is just like shaking and muttering to himself. Like he does seem to have had some type of mental break, some type of shock. Between your role and the difficulty getting through, God, you just don't know. You don't know what you can do this. I mean, it's an impossible situation.
Okay.
So it's impossible to figure out what's going on with him?
You think that he might be having some type of mental situation, but between the language barrier and everything else, it's just, yeah.
Okay. Well, Benedict has got the all access pass to the Dorchester still on him. And he's going to take it off of him, like off of his neck. He's going to take it off. He's going to like pat the guy, and he's going to put it over his head. And he's going
to
leave
this
guy
with the
all access pass. That's
where he needs
to go. Yeah, so
when he gets to the broad out, to the Dorchester, yeah, he's going to have a key card. He's going to be locked and loaded.
Anywhere you want, my friend. You'll be okay. Just don't go to the stairwell.
I'm sure on some level it's appreciated. But
Benedict. You and I both know that's a complete lie.
Just shut up, Hank. The man needs help.
They can't understand.
Let me do my work.
I think it was a nice gesture.
Yeah. Busiak does his work. Let me do my work.
As you guys are like having this like kind of thin soup that these people are sharing with you, you know, and there, and again, like there's this group of maybe like younger men. And maybe they're even wearing, you know, like this, you know, this group of men who kind of have like the pistol and the clubs, right? Maybe they're wearing the boots of some of these soldiers. Like, so they've obviously taken clothes from the dead, you know, and stuff like that. They're kind of like conclaving off and over in the side with this woman. And eventually she comes over with this young man, looks like he might be 14. And she, you know, she kind of like, she's telling you, she's like is holding like a hand on you, Hank, and like a hand on him, and she's, you know, she points to him and points to you and then points to the palace, you know, and then makes the pantomime like he and you walk, you know, like pantomiming a walking motion to the palace.
Hell yeah.
You know, and she like pats him and she's like, you know, Deciem, Hank. Deciem, you know, it's like, you know, it's like, and he just like, he nods to you, you know, and it's like, and you want to talk about like a bleak, hardened looking 14-year-old.
Hank like, will, you know. Two weapons Hank has on him is a heavy pistol and M4. And does this kid have a weapon with him?
He has a knife. He has what looks like to be... Remember that combat knife you guys found in Citri's house?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, something almost identical in a makeshift sheath, kind of like strapped to his thigh.
Hank will give him the heavy pistol.
You know, this is met with like an exclamation, not like panicked or anything, but like, oh, you know, like that you're like sharing your weaponry with him. You know, the crew seems to approve of this, and one of the men comes and like shows him like how to pop open the magazine, and the man doesn't even seem to really know super well, but he's like just doing his best to communicate with the kid in his own language.
Hard to believe that these people have survived here for this long. Assumed everybody here was some kind of otherworldly being or had a sadistic presence to them.
Benedict kind of steps forward and he like taps his chest. He says, Benedict. And then Hank. And he says, Busiak.
You know, they all exchange names with you guys and
What is his name in particular?
The kid?
The kid in particular, his name.
Yeah.
How do you spell it?
No.
He's trying to bomb.
But it's like, you know, he pats himself. Desium. You know, Desium, you know, it's like in his cracking pubescent voice. And they kind of take you to the edge. They take you to the edge of this little encampment, this little barricade they have built. And he like moves a piece of sheet metal to the side, and he has to kind of crouch down. You guys probably have to get on all fours to go through it, you know. And they wave after you, and it's like it's this weird parting that you've had with this tiny little sliver of civilization. As you guys are back on the road, you guys follow Desium, I assume. Or are you just going to say, fuck Desium, we're going to find our own way? That's,
I mean, no, we're going to follow him.
We have to follow him.
He makes his way expertly through the debris. You know, there are times where maybe he's in front of you. And the fearlessness of this child, of this 14-year-old boy, like, it's just, it's kind of, like, mind-blowing, you know, just the hardness of him. As he, you know, maybe he brings you guys through like a bombed out apartment block and he stops you. He like holds up a hand, you know, and you guys all instinctively stop as like a, and maybe like a truck, you know, full of these black uniformed fez wearing soldiers kind of rolls by and he like pokes his head out real quick to make sure they're gone. And then it's like, you know, quickly, you know, it's like, he like snaps his fingers like quickly, you know, at you guys to like go quickly across the street and stuff. And he does take you a little bit underground, like through what appears to be like some sewers, you know, some places are exposed to the open sky and stuff like that. He brings you expertly through different sections of this war zone until eventually there's a point where you're approaching an area and he constantly keeps telling you, he kind of makes the motion like stay down, like with his hand, you know, down, head down. It seems like you guys are growing close to an area with a lot of gunfire. There's like an active battle going on. And you come to a huge... It looks like there might have at one time been maybe a river or a canal that kind of ran through the city here. So there's like a big open area with no buildings, right? And there's like an old broken bridge that looks like it's been bombed out, that's collapsed. And on the other side, you see what appears to be some type of factory, like a big industrial building. It's got these big steel doors, like standing there, painted like yellow, like it's all rusted and messed up now, but it's like, at one time they might have been painted yellow. This big industrial building in front of you. And like I said, maybe there used to be like a canal here. But instead of dipping down, you know, in the way that a waterway would, it's almost level with bodies.
Oof.
Okay. Uniformed soldiers. You see these Soviet brown overcoats. You see the Black Wind. You see Germans, you see the bright, you know, the bright yellow and reds of the king's forces. You see ununiformed people. It's like, and there have to be thousands. There have to be thousands.
Just leveling out this canal.
Like almost complete level. There are definitely places like you're looking over the landscape, and there are places where you could probably still get cover and stuff like that.
Good. But God.
You can tell, like off to your left and your right, you can tell there are two forces that are basically fighting toward this building. You're not even sure if it's is it the Germans? Is it the Black Wind? You're not even sure who it is. It's just, and every now and then a mortar shell lands and a mess of these bodies just burst. And Desiem is here with you, and he points at the palace up in the distance, and then he points down at the building. He's like,
this must be the way somehow to the palace. The armies are trying to get there just like we are. It seems. I think there was a battle here, not necessarily I don't think this is a spot where they're throwing all the dead bodies. I think this was the detritus of something that happened earlier.
So what do you think, we gotta cross the river of dead bodies to get to the building?
Do I see any other way? Let me roll alertness. Is it just this straight up canal? Got a success.
I would say with your success, you see that there are the remains of maybe some trenches that you maybe could provide you a little bit of cover on the way over, but no, like you do not see another way. Like maybe you guys have even come out of one of these sewer entrances, and Desiem is like, he's not going any further. He's like,
right.
He points to him and back the way you guys came.
Busiak slaps him and he says, "You fucking coward."
It's a good thing his wisdom teeth haven't grown in yet, because they would have been knocked right out.
Benedict pantomime like a bridge?
Desiem, he's like, he kind of shrugs, like he doesn't know what you mean, but he points at the building, points at you guys, and he makes a motion with his arms like running.
Oh, he doesn't want us to go slow. That was going to be my first, but this kid's got us this far. Maybe we should take his advice and just sprint.
Yeah, I trust Desi.
And he takes this pistol, and he's had this pistol in his hand this whole time. It's like a big, pretty big pistol anyway, right? It's a pretty large sized pistol. He takes it and he holds it back out to you, Hank.
Hank pushes it to his chest and tells him to keep it.
You know, and again, just like the stone coldness of this kid, it just like, it's almost heartbreaking to watch him. He like, you know, just like furrows his brow and nods hard. And like just like kind of sticks it in his belt or whatever, you know, passes for a belt, you know. And he kind of turns to go back the way he came, and turns back to you guys, and he kind of makes just like hands together, like quick nod, like thank you, you know. And he turns to
Busiak, does the same back to him.
Benedict gives,
"You all right, kid?"
the snappiest salute of the British Empire that he can muster.
just like hand way out. He doesn't do anything with it. He just like, he doesn't know that one. And he goes back the way he came. And again, like you guys are at this place where it's like, there is, it's hot. Like this is a hot zone. But, well, actually, Hank and Benedict, roll me intelligence checks.
Wow, success.
Success and success.
You guys look up. You look at this factory. And this is... You realize that this factory, that the writing on the side of it, you see that maybe as you kind of look closer, like you can see that there is indeed writing on the side of it, like a big old sign that used to be there. And what you see is that it is actually not written in Carcosan. You actually think it's written in... probably in Russian. But it reminds you of something that you saw before, something that now seems an age ago. It is something that you saw written on a box, on a old stained cardboard box.
Bob Bob's, please.
Well, I don't think it was in Bob Bob's place, no. Though, good call back.
Fuck.
Swing and a miss. No, it was when you guys had gone to the encounter group and you had accosted the Phantom, who was dressed as the Phantom there.
Feels like a long time ago.
It was a long time ago. It literally was a long time for us. You guys had seen that she was putting, that the mask and the robes that you put on before you went into the group. You think this might be, like, again, none of you read Russian. Maybe Busiak can, like, again, I know Czech and Russian are not the same. I know that they don't rely on the same alphabet. But Busiak also was not there. This is familiar. And it's like, and it's, you know, Benedict and Hank, over your time together, it's just like, it's just one fucking thing. There's one link after another. One thing that you thought meant nothing, and now you're finding it later. You know?
So this was on the box of the container of the mask they were handing out. Is that what you're saying?
Yes, yes.
Mm-hmm. And to be clear, during that encounter group, we all sat together in a circle, and there was this weird presence that approached us when we were all masked up.
Right.
It's very unpleasant and unsettling.
Very unpleasant time.
Boys, I think we might... I don't know if we can see any armor around here, but it seems like we just have to cross the trenches.
Just do the best we can.
Can we see any armor? I have a helmet, and I'm wearing this helmet.
Body armor?
Yeah. Can we find some armor and try and just prepare ourselves for this crossing?
Well, we already have body armor on.
Yeah, you already have body armor.
What about Busiak? Hank, don't be selfish.
How could I forget Busiak?
He's just got mannequins. Super common. Body armor was not super common in World War II soldiers. I would say that if you wanted to, you could probably find yourself... You could probably find a decent helmet that probably is not riddled too bad to stick on Busiak's head.
I'll absolutely take that.
Yeah. So just to add a, you know, helmet that will give you a +1 to armor rating. You know, if you're going to be making your way across here. You know, there's probably a body that's not too far away for you to access. You feel like you don't have to go all the way out in there. But as you guys look across, again, it's the bodies, and there's various sandbags, chunks of concertina wire, you know, which is like that razor wire. And where there is any ground, it is soupy and wet. It looks like it would just suck your foot down. And you guys are going to try to run across this little no man's land.
Well, Joe, what does it... So you said there's this trench, or almost like a what would be a canal, but it's just filled up with bodies. Is there... Mm-hmm. You said there's also a trench which maybe leads through it. So it's not... It's
if you would like to take the time... Yeah, if you would like to take the time to make your way and do it a little more tactically and not go as quickly, you think you might be able to get derive some cover
from those trenches.
Okay.
Yes.
Well, what if there's a compromise between the two? What if we could get to a vantage point to sort of scope out a way through the body maze, and once we've established our route, then just fucking book it?
Is there a way, Joe, that we can combine these two routes you've given us and get the benefits of going fast and having cover?
And then you would like all the bonuses.
Motorbikes or helicopters again.
Now that you spell it out like that, Brad, that is what I was doing. But I was really thinking, like, if I were in that position, that's what I would do.
What
like,
you would do, want to there's probably a big carnival cannon, and you can just shoot yourself across into the tractor factory.
No. Okay, let's just go. Let's just go. We need to go.
The speedy route or the cover route? Which one are we going to take?
Through cover. We just okay. Be careful. We take it slow. No, Busiak.
No.
Just wear your helmet.
It's a fucking corpse farm. I don't want to spend a fucking second.
As you guys are having this discussion, you see out in front of you, within about 20 meters of the building, you see a body flop over. And as it does, three men kind of pull themselves out of like what looks like maybe one of these like small trenches, or maybe they were just covering themselves with the body, and they all three of them are wearing like regular like like a mishmash of civilians clothes, and they make a run. You see two of them have rifles, one of them looks like he just has a pistol, and they're just like shooting off into the distance, like blah blah blah, like as they're running. And as they go, there's a moment where you see off in the distance on the other side, kind of adjacent to the tractor factory or to the factory, you see that they're in a like up a little ways, like in a bit of an elevated position. You see the muzzle flashes of machine guns just da 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 as you watch these three men just get cut down, just mowed down.
Let's not go that way.
Jesus.
But like, but the thing is, but it seems to come okay. But even the gunfire seems to come from both sides. Like, it's like there is, like, there is no good way to do this. Besides the clown like cannon.
Throwing yourself in a... God damn it.
I'll take the clown cannon, if it is there.
Alright. I give them... I have two uses in the medicine kit.
Mm-hmm.
I give one to Benedict and one to Busiak. And just like, if y'all fall, just use the stim pack or whatever, you know, maybe there's some kind of like something that give you a boost and gets through it. And we just, no one stop, just keep going and heal yourself.
Okay. Are you saying every man for himself? Is that what we say? Guys.
Well, I'm just saying if one of us falls down and we try to help the one, we're just going to get mowed down as well.
Yeah, no, I understand. I want to clarify.
I think that's what we're doing.
I don't think
see you on the other side. And Hank's going to run.
Hank goes. Hank goes.
Oh, fuck. Oh, fuck. Oh, fuck.
You guys begin to sprint across this no man's land. And again, like, I cannot describe to you the smell. A mix of cordite, rotting, stagnant water, and like of dust and debris and smoke, maybe even a tinge of mustard gas in the far distance, you know, not enough to fuck you up, but like, God, you guys begin to run. I need everyone to make me a sanity check as you realize that just as if as in every other place in this awful fucking city, that getting from one place to another is not as simple as it seems.
I got a fumble. That's awesome.
I got a failure.
Excellent.
Hank failure.
Man.
Two failures and one fumble.
Never has it been.
This is like the best case scenario.
Never has it been so good.
Busiak just pops along up into the palace like wham. He just teleports. Yep. And telefrags.
He starts like swimming through corpses doing a breaststroke. I fucking got this.
Busiak jumps onto a pipe and goes down like Mario and then comes up. You guys begin running, and as you do, like there are these moments where, you know, where again, like you're, and Busiak like is like out in front of you guys, you know, you guys are still making pretty good time, but there's even a moment where in the madness of it all, and like, and again, you guys are taking fire from both sides, and even as you begin to run, mortar shells start falling around you in the periphery, and both Benedict and Hank, maybe Benedict stumbles and Hank kind of picks him up, you know, and kind of wrenches him to his feet. You guys look forward, and Busiak is like waving to you like, come on. And just then, like, you hear this incoming whistle. But right at the last moment, maybe the two of you blink or shield your eyes and you look back up. And instead, and there, all of a sudden, there's like a half wall of sandbags that Busiak jumps behind that was not there previously.
What?
It's like, and as you guys, you talk about swimming through the bodies, Busiak, you like get down on your elbows and your knees, and you're crawling through these low spots trying to keep covered. You can hear distant shouts in foreign languages from both sides. Go ahead and get me. So, Busiak, you seem to make a way, and maybe there's even a moment where, Busiak, you're running. You get up to your feet and you suddenly the ground lets loose underneath you. It lets loose underneath you and you fall down and land hard. And you look around and realize you are in an underground, like, trench tunnel. And you can hear the thumping above you, but you look ahead and see there's an opening right in front of those yellow doors. Like, you've got... And as you guys are still, like, trying to grab each other and pull each other up, you look up, and yes, like Mario Brothers, Busiak kind of, like, pops out of an unknown place up near the doors.
A dark green pipe, and you just...
Busiak, you find yourself diving behind these huge steel doors. You hear rounds dun dun gunk like hitting them as you like dive in to the factory proper, and you look back as these two are still on your way. All three of you give me another sanity check.
Bumble for Hank.
Oh, god damn it. I got a success.
I got a failure.
Okay. Busiak, you find yourself like, come on. Like, you're helpless there. But in that moment, like, you find yourself almost too grounded to necessitate anything. Now, you both make it up there. Both Benedict and Hank, you're running through and like bullets are whizzing past you and mortar shells are dropping, you know, like just slightly behind you. The zero of the operator's just slightly off.
Does Hank just like stop and say, no, and just hold up his hand?
The chosen one.
No, maybe, but here's what happens. So Hank, as you are going, you're like, you know, you're running and you're about to get, and maybe there's a moment where you look up, Hank, and you look in the far distance and you see the silhouette of a man with a rifle with a scope, and you know the barrel has fallen, you know the sights have fallen on you, but right as that happens, and Hank, you're looking up, like this guy's like perched on top of a building, silhouetted, he is vaporized. As the entire building just takes some type of explosive shell, and Hank, you turn around and look, and through the rubble coming through the area where you come is a T-32 Russian tank.
What?
It clanks out onto the battlefield, and you see that it has fired a round and has just blown this sniper off the top of this building, and instantly all of the fire, all of the machine guns, all the mortars instantly reorient to this new threat and begin to bombard it. As you guys all get up to there to the factory and you wrench and you have to like move bodies out of the way and rubble as you guys pull these huge steel doors close. And in this moment, with this battle still raging on the other side, the three of you beat feet through a dilapidated factory. You see pieces of tractors, but you also see what looks like they might have been trying to build tanks in this factory. And as you guys get to the far side and get onto the street, you all stumble out onto the street, you know, expecting there to be another firefight in front of you. For everything to be suddenly quiet, still. And even the streets, it looks like there might have been a firefight here, but it looks like all the debris has been swept up and pushed up into nice, neat piles. As the streets are suddenly quiet, peaceful, and clean. And that is where we are going to stop.
Nice.
Wow, how far away is the palace? It's
insane.
It's still out there.
It's still out there?
It's still out there.
You're telling me I'm out $500?
Yes. Yes. You can Venmo me whenever you're ready.
What's your username on Venmo?
All right.
So that was two fumbles that effectively saved our asses.
Dude.
That's honestly crazy.
That's insane.
That's one of those.
That seems situation like such there. A dangerous
I'm not going to call that area a character killer necessarily, but that's a super dangerous one. Mm. And two fumbles, which.
That got us through.
Are good in this situation. you know?
I feel like I'm taking crazy pills.
Yeah, thank you, Pumpkin. It's I'm glad you enjoyed it. Everyone listening, everyone watching, thank you so much for joining us. These guys finally made it through the war zone. They're done.
That was fun.
Thank God.
Down with the war zone.
That one was actually fun.
Was,
yeah.
Imagining a sea of corpses, the imagery of that.
Well, actually, like a World War One style No Man's Land with just corpses. Mm-hmm. Just as
and we actually like helped someone and it benefited us.
Yeah. Yeah, which is typically not the case.
Yeah.
Definitely not.
Benedict got some tea.
But yeah, guys, very good. Benedict got some tea, even if it was weird, barely tea.
It's a happy story. It's a happy ending.
It's a happy story.
It was more microplastics than tea.
Right, at that point. So the thing that Carcosa has in common with the modern day. All right. Everyone listening, everyone watching, thank you for joining us. If you want to support us, get things a week early, hit the Patreon. Tell a friend about us. Tell a friend about our adventure. Guys, like, we are getting ever closer to the end. You know? And
It's going. Having fun.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's definitely like we'll talk about the sanity check, but it's like, man, Impossible Landscapes. What a ride.
Roller coaster.
Anyway, thank you.
I think it was just me and Joe on here, but I was saying like for the when we get done with this for the recap, I think we just need to like live stream it and just have like a marathon.
Like a debrief, like a 3 hour long debrief.
I would be done with that.
It's almost necessary. Like, you know, like, ugh, that's a lot. Yeah. But guys, thank you so much. Everyone listening, everyone watching, thank you for being here. Catch us next time. And remember, as always, stay safe, stay sane. Bye.
Bye-bye.